Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And joining me at this point in time is David Law, professor of law and professor of political science at WashU, Washington University in St. Louis, and University of Hong Kong. And actually, David, thanks so much. He actually is joining us from Hong Kong. Welcome to the show, David.
Newell, thanks for having me.
And I know it's late there, so obviously you're having a late dinner and willing to stay up to join us.
Happy to do it.
So, David, I'm sure you've seen the roundtable, one-hour discussion, bipartisan leaders from both houses of Congress talking about this gun control bill and talking, and the president's desire is to have one incredible bill. What are your thoughts?
Yes, well, it's an unusual way to make policy, that very loose, rambling discussion. It is true that as of today, the president's desire is to have this one bill, which would it was a little hard to keep track of what exactly he thought should go in the proposal. At various points, he expressed support for raising the age for purchasing assault weapons to 21, possibly banning them altogether, taking guns away from people thought to be mentally ill. That one might be legally problematic, possibly renewing the assault weapons ban. There are quite a few. I'm actually very curious to hear what you thought of the proposal from a law enforcement perspective. But I do think that at least the taking away of guns from people without going to court, that's going to be a bit of a problem if he's serious about that.
Well, my theory on that is that if you put that in the bill, it's going to be instantly challenged. We're going to be mired down in the courts for who knows how long. We get nowhere, and we don't have an operational outcome, meaning something that we can weave into all of these challenges that we have from an operational standpoint and actually have meaningful outcomes.
Right. It's probably not a great idea to incorporate a provision that right from the outset has some constitutional defects. It's going to be very difficult to justify. You know this as well as anyone. If the government wants to take something from someone, that's a search or a seizure covered by the Fourth Amendment, and so you're going to need to go to court in almost all circumstances to justify taking someone's gun from them. And I think that probably also plays into the absolute very worst fears of the pro-gun lobby that the government will essentially come to take your guns, which at some level was what President Trump seemed to be proposing.
Yeah, I think it's hypocritical as well, and that's the problem that I have with it, because he just signed legislation overturning an Obama rule relative to the Social Security Administration sharing those that have mental health issues with the background check to bar gun ownership. And the thought there was that for the same reason, that this was going to be violative of other constitutional principles.
Precisely. And I think that it's probably not just in the area of gun control that we're seeing inconsistency from day to day in the Trump administration, but that is very much an inconsistency, the idea of immediately rolling back the Obama-era rule that would have allowed for the sharing of information with respect to who is mentally ill and really should not have access to firearms.
Yeah, I looked at the actual administrative rules and everything that went behind that. And as a law enforcement guy, I thought it was a pretty sound approach for the most part. There were a couple of areas of slippery slope, but that could have been remediated, I think, very easily. But I thought it was a well-reasoned approach to try and accomplish what we all want to accomplish in keeping the guns out of those folks that are a danger to themselves or others.
Yeah, I haven't seen the polling on that particular item, but I would be very surprised if there were not a strong majority of Americans, both in law enforcement and just regular citizens, who would like to see everything possible done to keep firearms out of the hands of the mentally ill. And I think that that's one of the reasons you saw President Trump picking up on that particular idea. But it's something that is awfully difficult to administer, as we saw in the Florida shootings, where there were many signs that the shooter was mentally troubled. And there, we have legal processes and protections in place. You cannot simply lock someone up because you think they're dangerous. You may know they're dangerous, but even knowing that someone's problematic, it's difficult to get someone to get to the point where someone is declared mentally ill and therefore legally prohibited from possessing a firearm. There's a long way between knowing that someone has a problem and being able to do that legally.
And absolutely, as you go through the judicial process with 50 different ways of the states, and then that doesn't even take into consideration the territories of how you go about doing that process with the nuances of everybody's individual state laws, it becomes very problematic.
Right. And then you've got the federal-state cooperation problem as well. You know, there was a Supreme Court decision a few years ago that actually invalidated portions of the Brady Bill because they required state law enforcement to turn information over to federal law enforcement. So you're not just dealing with 50 states, but you're also dealing with an inability to get really good state-federal cooperation because the Supreme Court has said that the federal government can't, quote-unquote, commandeer state law enforcement.
And going back to what you said earlier, and I agree with your observation, you're not absolutely sure what it was that he was advocating for. When it when it came to the universal background conversation during this meeting, there seemed to be many different appreciations of what that universal check would look like. And, you know, when they began to try to get specific about the loopholes, it seemed to me the conversation was immediately changed and jumped from person to person who had their own ideology about other issues to talk about brought up. And I thought that was by design. That was not by accident.
I think so, too. And this is also, you know, the way policy is made is you have different people representing different constituencies in different places. And, of course, they're going to have different concerns. Yes, you know, gun control, gun violence, these are national issues. But our political process is designed for different people to raise different concerns. So you put them all in a room for an hour, you're not necessarily going to get the most coherent conversation, which is why, generally speaking, we don't make policy this way, right? Usually it's not the president bringing senators and members of Congress together and they just decide on the fly what's going to happen.
Right. Well, in giving him the benefit of the doubt, because I try to be fair to both sides, his administration and Sarah Huckabee Sanders has said throughout the week that by the end of this week, so that we have today and tomorrow, that he would be issuing a policy position on these issues that he is going to advocate for. So we'll wait and see.
I think we are in for an interesting ride. I will admit, I think, and I'm not alone in this, I think I was quite surprised to hear some of the things the president seemed to be saying in this proposal. I think if we're going to make, you know, our way forward, one thing that has to happen is sort of sensible gun control proposals. It might be a good idea to pair them with reassurance for people who, you know, have genuine, legitimate reasons for owning and having guns, right? It might not be the worst thing in the world to have something more like a Canadian system where we're flexible when it comes to 15 or 16-year-olds who need to hold, you know, own hunting rifles because of where they live. You know, they live in rural areas. They actually hunt. They have to worry about things like bears. And so you make sure they have the right safety training, and then you license them. But, you know, once that happens, you're quite clear that there's an entire class of firearms that it is okay to possess. And I think if we can bring down the fear level of gun owners that the government's going to come for their guns, there's nothing you're going to be allowed to own, if we can just be clear, there are some firearms, you know, bolt-action rifles, hunting rifles, regular shotguns, you are just going to be okay with those as long as you can show some basic competency and gun safety knowledge, right? I think there is a middle ground here, and it's not necessarily being articulated.
No, I don't disagree, and I think those are some of the loopholes that they can work on. One of the other things that I found interesting is that the House Majority Whip, Steve Scalise, brought up the issue about the concealed handgun reciprocity provision. And the president was pretty strong in saying, if you really want to kill this bill, put that provision in there because it'll never pass.
That was interesting. And, you know, my guess there is what happened is the president alluded to his earlier lunch or breakfast meeting with various representatives of the NRA, and he must have floated a number of ideas with them. And I'm guessing for him to have immediately shot down the concealed carry proposal from Representative Scalise, he must have gotten something very explicit. My guess is that the NRA people tried to draw a line in the sand and said, do not go near concealed carry. That's my guess. What do you think?
I think they want it. I think they want concealed carry, but I don't think the votes are there. I agree with the president. I don't think the votes are there. I think there are too many blue states that have more restrictive handgun laws, and there is not an appetite to get to that point of getting this reciprocity bill passed. Once again, it creates a whole host of administrative issues as to where what rights and obligations you have as a concealed handgun permit owner and where you can go with it. And as a concealed gun handgun permit individual, I would be concerned about, knowing all of the laws that change in some states by county, much less by state.
Right. I think people are willing to trade a little bit of maybe a little gun ownership rights at the margin for something that is simple and transparent and easy to understand. I definitely think that that would be a very complicated system. But, I agree with you that the concealed carry thing seems like a deal breaker in terms of votes in Congress. But so many of the things that he was talking about, if you had asked me a week or a month or certainly a year ago, are these deal breakers, I would have said they were deal breakers as well, right? Raising the age for assault weapons, even talking about taking away people's guns, possibly bringing back the assault weapons ban. I would have thought that all of these things are off the table. So the real question is, why does he think that this particular thing is politically unfeasible, whereas all the other things he was talking about would be feasible? That I found curious.
Well, because I think there's a stronger or closer connection to the event when you think about Las Vegas, when you think about the shooting in Texas, and when you think about Parkland, to that than there is to concealed carry. And part of the problem is emotional thinking is driving a lot of what's going on right now. And the danger, as you know, of emotional thinking is you don't always end up with credible, meaningful outcomes. And it's creating that balance where you can remove emotion from the event, from the issue, because as one of my guests said yesterday, violence is a process. It's not an event. And so
that's very wise. I mean, that's very wise. I think that the problem is when we look, for better or for worse, when governments make big public policy moves, in fact, even when constitutions are adopted, constitutions are usually adopted after some sort of revolution or unrest. Laws are usually adopted in response to some sort of emotional event, right? I mean, policy wonks sometimes get to make policy, but when you have these longstanding impasses, it really takes something emotional to break through. But again, what I find curious, and there have been a lot of theories about this in the media, and I'm not sure that I know the answer to this, but it's not like emotions weren't running high after Sandy Hook. Right. It's not like emotions weren't running high after the nightclub shooting in Florida. Emotions are running high now. As a political scientist, I want to ask myself, what fundamentally is different about this episode from the other episodes that explains why we might actually see some kind of a breakthrough? And there are only two things I can point to. I'm curious to hear what you think they might be.
David, I got to get to a break. Can you hold it and we'll pick it up right there?
Sure,
can you stay with us? We'll be right back. This
is
Newell on WWL. We're back with David Law, professor of law and professor of political science at Washington University in St. Louis and also the University of Hong Kong. And that's where he joins us from at the present time. And David, we were talking about what makes this event different. And you said that you thought there were two things that you were getting ready to outline.
Right. Well, there's the thing that's being emphasized by the media, but that's not the thing that I think it's real, but it's not the major thing. The thing that's being emphasized a lot by the media, which is interesting, is how articulate the victims, the students at Stoneman Douglas are. And it is remarkable to watch. Watching Marco Rubio get dressed down at that town hall was really something. But at a deeper structural level, I think one of the major differences this time around is you have unified Republican government, right? I mean, the Republicans own this kit and caboodle. They've got the White House, they've got the House, they've got the Senate, they've got the Supreme Court. And so when there's fighting over gun control, it's difficult, I think, to push that into, to characterize it as just Democrat versus Republican conflict, right? It's hard for the Republican, because you've got unified government, which is relatively rare in American politics, it's really hard for the Republicans to pass the buck on this one. So I think that's a big difference from the previous debates. The other difference is we have a Republican president, but he is, and I think this is a fair and neutral term, he's quite unorthodox. Right? He is not a typical Republican by any stretch of the imagination. So there is the sense that on the one hand, the Republicans cannot escape accountability for this particular issue, and this is a tough one for them because, you know, part of the pitch, implicit or explicit, for Republicans for many decades has been, we will keep you safe. And what we hear these high school students saying is, you are not keeping us safe because you are...
David, I have to interrupt you again. I'm sorry, yes. Because we went over into first when we got to get to a hard news break. Are you able to stay with us a little longer?
Sure, of course.
Okay, we'll be right back after the break. This is Newell on WWL. We're back. We're talking to David Law, professor of law and professor of political science at Washington University in St. Louis and also at the University of Hong Kong, where he joins us from. And David, we were getting into the point of what makes this event different. And you talked about a unified government where the Republicans control it, presidency, Congress, Supreme Court. And then you were making your other point.
Yes, I think that was the first point. Was the unified government aspect of it. So this it makes it less of a partisan issue, potentially. The other point would simply be the unorthodox nature of President Trump's policy positions. And, you know, the Republican Party, I think, is still having some trouble figuring out, you know, to what extent it's going to follow his lead, to what extent they have bought into, you know, his positions as opposed to the positions they've traditionally held. And a lot of the internal opposition within the party to Trump, as we've seen, has softened significantly since the election. So to the extent they followed him on a number of things you normally wouldn't expect, gun control may be one of them. We can't rule that out.
Yeah. You know, I think there's a third element that I believe as well. As this situation begins to reveal itself, it wasn't really a breakdown in the assessment of the danger of this individual, because everybody knew, from the student complaints to the school council complaints to school administration, school teachers, law enforcement at a local level, state level, and federal level, all knew. It was really the reaction to it. And so I think there's this a sense of cynicism as to, no matter how strong we make the universal background checks, how strong we do all of these other things, it's still not going to matter because we're relying on human intervention in a system that's really all set up about minimization of risk, not elimination of risk, because we'll never eliminate this risk in its totality.
Right. I think people would like to see more lines of defense. And what's interesting is some of the lines of defense that are being trotted out, we can see how clearly they failed in the situation. For example, arming school teachers. Well, look, you know, there was a public safety officer on premises, right? And by all accounts, he apparently did. So look, if you've got these officers who are not standing up to this kind of a threat, what likelihood is there that a teacher will, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, the reasonable impulse here is people are asking for is as many lines of defense against something like this happening again as possible. And we know that none of these are foolproof, right? Everything, exactly as you say, is about risk reduction, but we can never eliminate the risk completely.
No, it's going to be that series of concentric circles of developing something that's, you know, when it reveals itself, a little bit more intrusive. If something else reveals, more in intrusive nature by somewhere, someone, somewhere, somehow. And I think the systemic issues that we need to really resolve is, and I say this all the time, almost every day, information is power and communication is key. If we have the information and we hadn't figured out how to communicate it to all the appropriate parties that can actually do something about it, we're not going to get anywhere. Your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, my impression, I could be wrong about this, is my impression is there was actually a fair amount of communication that went on surrounding the shooter at the Florida high school. And it still didn't prevent things from happening, right? As you say, a lot of warning bells did go off. So it may be that, you know, this may be like fighting terrorism, right? Even with the best information, I like to think of a hockey metaphor. You could have a really good goalie, but once in a while, a shot's going to slip through.
No,
right?
Absolutely. No doubt. Well, David, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. I know it's way past your bedtime in Hong Kong, and we really appreciate the fact that you stayed up to talk to us this morning.
It was a pleasure to chat. Thank you for having me on.
That's David Law, professor of law and professor of political science at Washington University, WashU in St. Louis, and the University of Hong Kong, where he joined us from. He's always a great guest to talk to and is very learned in so many issues surrounding this, and we appreciate his time. We'll be right back. We want to know what you're thinking. 260-1870 or text us at 870-870 as we talk about this all-important issue about how we're going to get from point A to point B in trying to, whether it be universal background checks or other issues, tighten up on those and move forward. We'll be right back.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.